Welcome back for the conclusion of our series, How Are You Doing Really? Today, we're going to talk specifically about our mental health. And then a little later, Sharita's going to sit down with licensed psychologist, Dr. Wendy Dickinson, for a really practical conversation. But first, we're going to get to hear from this incredible band. So here we go.
When you're weary, feeling small, hey, when tears are your eyes, I will try them all. Yeah. I'm on your side. Oh, when times get rough, yeah, and friends just can't be found, like a bridge over trouble.
Why can't you be more happy? I mean, or at least a little less on edge. Why are you always so anxious? Your life is fantastic. I mean, don't you realize how good you have it? Can't you just get over it? I mean, maybe let it go already. You know, if you were really serious about being a Christian, you wouldn't need a counselor. I mean, if you were really serious, you'd just surrender it to God and everything would finally be okay in your life. Now, if you're like me, I'm sure you've had more than one well-meaning friend, family member, or maybe even spiritual leader in your life challenge you with questions like that. And if you are like me, well, their questions left you feeling inadequate, filled with doubt, unsure about your own capabilities, and obviously far worse than before they asked. And what's even worse is I'm quite certain you've probably asked yourself some of these things. More than once, I'm willing to bet. Especially whenever you're alone with your thoughts, which, come on, lately, feels like all the time, right? I mean, the reality is we all live in this world that's constantly berating us with this question, why can't you be more happy? I mean, daily we're inundated in messages through advertising and through the media and even from our leaders that promise us happiness. They're selling us things that we don't need to fill a void that they really can't ever fill. We're all chasing perfection, right? We're chasing the perfect body, the perfect job, the perfect promotion, the perfect house, the perfect relationship. Some of you, the perfect ending to a relationship. We want the perfect political candidate and even the perfect cause to finally rally behind. And this chase for happiness, this never-ending pursuit of this elusive perfection that we think we so desire, well, it's destroying us. I mean, think about it. Every time we arrive where we thought we'd be happy, we're just not quite there yet, right? We need one more rep. We need one less cookie. We need one more title, one less worry. We sure would like one more bedroom in this house. And so there we are. We're back on the chase again. Think about it. I mean, it's no wonder we're physically exhausted. But the reality is, for many of us, this goes so much further than simply physical exhaustion. This is so much bigger than just needing a good night's sleep so that I can finally pull myself together. I mean, we've tried that over and over and over. And yet, here we are, to the point that many of us are now so crippled by things like fear and anxiety and stress and loneliness or even despair and hopelessness to even want to keep chasing those things. In fact, I bet many of you can't even remember what you were chasing to begin with, much less the last time you felt the happiness that it promised you. No, this isn't just physical. This isn't just get some rest and you'll feel better. This isn't just get over it, hope more or trust more or pray more or even have more faith. This is mental. For some of you, this may even be a physiologically based biochemical imbalance that requires medication. Whatever it is, though, one thing is for sure. This isn't going away. It's not getting better. So today, why don't we try something different for a change? Let's talk about it, which I know, I mean, we don't like to do, right? I mean, the reality is, though, most of us have or will experience symptoms of emotional distress. Some of us, anxiety or even depression at some point in our lives. I know I have. I mean, honestly, my mental health is not something I've really ever had to think much about. But now, like many of you, anxiety seems to have become a constant companion as I try to personally navigate life in this pandemic. It's something new for me. And truthfully, it's been really hard for me. It's been hard for me to reconcile my faith with this emotional and mental distress that I'm experiencing. I know a lot of you can relate to that. Some of you, like me, this has been brought on by the world we're currently living in. But others? Well, for others of you, this has been a way of life for you, really, for as long as you can remember now. I don't know if you realize this, but the CDC and the National Alliance on Mental Illness reports that 1 in 5 adults in the United States experiences mental illness in a year. More than 50% of adults in the United States will be diagnosed with a mental illness or disorder at some point in their lifetime. Additionally, 1 in 25 Americans are currently living with a serious mental illness, such as schizophrenia, bipolar disorder, or even major depression. To put all of that in perspective, it's about 65 million people who are living with some type of mental illness. And to make things far worse, most of those people are dealing with mental illness. Well, they're dealing with it and having to navigate it alone with no one to talk to while living in fear that others may find out about their disorder and start to think less of them. Sure, trends are changing, but sadly, the stigma still persists. And in fact, 33% of all Americans say that people with mental health disorders actually scare them. That means that at least a third of us are afraid of a fourth of us who are just struggling to keep our heads above the water. I mean, it's no wonder we're not doing okay, really. Mental illness is so misunderstood that it provokes fear and mistrust. But what is so amazing to me about being a follower of Jesus is that we get to push back against that. We get to push back against fear and prejudice. So today, let's push back some. The reality is there's been an unhealthy spiritual climate in this country for decades. The church has only added to the seclusion, the shame, and the hiding that people feel when under mental distress. So if you're not a Jesus follower, I actually totally get that. The church often reinforces the idea that our mental health is directly connected to moral or spiritual failures instead of the reality of just being a human. At the same time, there are many people who are Christ followers out there right now, and they especially feel this pressure because they were taught from a young age that, you know, saved people should be happy and healthy people whose lives stand in stark contrast to this dark past from which they were rescued. So, in short, we all feel not spiritual enough. But if you're to be written off as not spiritual enough for struggling with your mental health, well, we'd have to rip out some pretty important people from both the Old and the New Testaments. I mean, you would have to exclude people like Elijah, King David, Jonah, Job, Jeremiah, Isaiah, Paul. I mean, I could go on and on, but all of these people wrestled with some form of depression or despair. And if you're familiar with your Old or New Testament at all, you know all of those people were considered pillars of the faith. And if historical examples alone aren't enough to assure you that God hears and understands and even cares about your mental health, I mean, try this quote on for size. My soul is deeply troubled. My soul is overwhelmed with sorrow to the point of death. You know who said that? Jesus said that. You see, when you really read what the New Testament writers record about the life of Jesus, you realize he's not some Superman who was impervious to mental distress. No, he was someone who was far more acquainted with our mental distress than anyone who has ever lived. He was betrayed by everyone he'd ever known. He was beaten, he was mocked, and he was tortured. And when all of that was happening, he gasped for air and he cried out with his head to the sky, my God, why have even you forsaken me? The fact is, it's just way too overly simplistic to say that all of our mental health issues are this result of a lack of faith or because we're not spiritual enough. When you decide to see your happiness and your health as a measure of how spiritual you are, you're destined for disappointment. Jesus himself told us, blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs, well, theirs is the kingdom of God. Jesus entered into our suffering, yes, but he also validated it. Listen to me, having a mental health issue, it's not a failure. Struggling with things like depression, anxiety, PTSD, OCD, body dysmorphia, or any other health concern, it's real, and it should be addressed with compassion and with professional intervention, and it should all be done without shame. So if you're sitting here today and you're struggling with your mental health, if you've never felt more alone and you feel like you've never ever felt safe enough to seek help because everyone just expects you to be okay or just expects you to get over it, I want you to know it's okay not to be okay. And the church is made up of many, each with an important role to play. So this church is gonna be proactive in saying, you're welcome here. You are wanted here. You're necessary here. You're not this extraneous thing that needs to be fixed. You're precious and beloved, and we need you here.
Have you ever felt like nobody was there? Have you ever felt forgotten in the middle of nowhere?
Have you ever felt like you could disappear? Like you could fall, no one would hear. Well, let that lonely feeling wash away. Maybe there's a reason to believe you'll be okay. Cause when you don't feel strong,
crashing through, and you need a friend to carry you. When you're broken on the ground, you will be found.
So let the sun come streaming in, cause you reach up and you rise again. Lift your head up to the sky, you will be found.
I'll take your part.
water. I will ease your
As Tinsley said, at Decatur City, we want to be a safe place when it comes to processing our mental health and navigating the times we're not okay. To wrap up our series, we're going to take a few minutes to be really practical. I'm here with Dr. Wendy Dickinson. She's a licensed psychologist and founder and CEO of Grow Counseling in Atlanta. Wendy, we are so happy to have you here with us today.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, you're welcome. I want to ask you a couple of questions, but the first question I want to ask is, what have you seen or heard or experienced from a lot of your clients when it comes to mental health challenges that are very unique to the season that we're in right now?
Yeah, I think we're experiencing a lot of unique things right now, and people are overwhelmed, they're stressed out. A lot of people are really at a breaking point. Yeah. And I think that there are two specifically unique things that we're facing. One is a sense of collective grief. Mm. So if you think about all the grief and the loss that we've experienced in the last few months, you know, I think about students who ended the year in a way that they didn't expect. And there was a lot of loss. And then over the summer, they didn't get to do the things they would normally do. And now here we're starting back the school year. And they're feeling a sense of loss.
Yeah.
People have lost jobs. Parents are feeling disconnected from their communities. So there's a lot going on in terms of grief. I don't think that everybody's labeling it that way, but that really is the feeling that people are having. And usually when people experience grief, people in their community, their friends, their family, they're able to rally and help support them. And so they take on part of the grief and hold it for that person who's experiencing the grief. But right now, our grief buckets are all full. We all have more than we can handle, or just as much as we can handle. And so we don't have the ability to really take on and hold other people's grief. We're kind of just passing it around from one person to the next. So that creates a real challenge. The second thing is that people are experiencing enormous levels of stress, right? And I don't think that people really recognize how destructive stress can be.
Yes.
The American Medical Association has identified that stress is a factor in more than 75% of physical illnesses that we face. So it's not just a mental health issue. It's a physical health issue, too. I talk to clients about a simple scale, green, yellow, red, right? So green's a day at the beach. Red's like super stressed out, crisis mode.
Okay.
Most Americans live in yellow or maybe high yellow or orange, right? Mm-hmm. Like already. It doesn't take much to shift them into
red.
Yeah. Three things that we know increase a stressor is when it's unpredictable, unknown, and doesn't have an end point.
I need you to say that again.
It's unpredictable, unknown, it doesn't have an end point. It describes exactly what
Where
we've
we
been facing for so long.
Yeah.
One of the things that we know is that stress over time can become a crisis, and crisis over time becomes a trauma. So when we live in this high stress mode for so long, there are really powerful ramifications to it. And we start to see people unwind. We start to see people deal with hopelessness, depression, anxiety, fear, despair.
Yeah, I was going to say despair, deaths. There's been so many people that have, like you said, had committed suicide and different things because of the stress. And it's just, like you said, we've never experienced it before.
It's so hard.
So it's just,
we have to rewind pretty far back in our collective history, probably to like a world war, to identify a time when every single person, every community, every family, every friend group has been impacted by something in some way at the same time.
Right.
And what I've seen from that is people kind of self-isolating, even aside from quarantine and trying to stay safe physically. I think people have really emotionally kind of gone into a hole because it feels like if I connect, if I reach out and say, how are you doing? I don't know if I can handle or hold what you have
to
share.
Yeah.
So it's an isolation over time leads to trauma. Mm. We know that relational connection insulates us from the negative effects of trauma, but isolation can actually lead to trauma. So it just intensifies this experience that we're having.
That actually gets me or segues me into the next question, right? I know for me personally, the first week, first 2 or 3 days that everything got announced of, okay, we're going to shut down, it's going to be closed. I have my own business, and I lost every single job, every single one. So all of a sudden, I was normally used to kind of like, okay, we're going to work this out as a freelancer. You know, I got a little couple weeks in between. Now I have no time. Now I have no money. Now I have no prospects. And that the weight of that all of a sudden is much heavier than before. For all of the people who are experiencing things due to job loss, due to, you know, losing loved ones, the despair deaths, all of those things, what do you say that's practical? Because we've been talking a lot the last couple weeks in the series, I would say more on an abstract level, like, hey, be honest with yourself, be honest with God, be honest with others. But how do you practically stay away from the isolation that would lead to trauma?
What can you
right?
do?
Right. What do you actually do? Or some small things I can do at home that I don't know if they fall in line with self-care or, you know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. One of the things I've found myself saying a lot to clients is under this umbrella of being gentle with yourself is just, this is hard because it's hard. This is hard because it's hard. It's not hard because you're broken or because you're not enough or because you have mental health issues. This is just hard. So I think, you know, as a real practical starting point, we need to give ourselves permission to recognize that what we are walking through and carrying is extremely hard. From a practical perspective, I'd break it into three areas. So mind, body, spirit, right?
Say that one more time.
Mind, body, spirit, right? Let's start with spirit.
Yeah.
We are hardwired for connection. We are hardwired for relationships with God, with people. And all of that has been kind of dismantled, the way that we connect with people. And so I would say make it a priority. We're going to have to be creative. It's going to be different. It's not going to feel normal. But we've got to find ways to stay connected to combat that isolation that we were talking about. So I would say make relationships, stay connected, make it a priority.
So like FaceTime calls or...
Whatever it takes. Stand in your yard and yell at your neighbor. You know,
whatever. Not angrily.
No, not nicely.
Okay, yeah.
So that spirit, with your mind, it's really important what you focus on.
Yes.
I always say to clients, what you focus on grows.
Yeah.
So this idea that we're going to find what we're looking for. If we're looking for the stressors out there, we're going to notice those more.
Yes, ma'am.
If we're looking for the helpers, if we're looking for the resources, if we're looking for the support, we're going to be more focused on that.
Yeah.
Now, that's not to say stick your head in the sand.
Right.
But I like to think of it in terms of plan for the future, but live in the present, right? Plan for the future, live in the present. Stay grounded.
Yeah.
Because most of us, if we answer the question, are you all right right now, right this moment, are you okay?
Yeah.
Most of us, most of the time, would be able to answer yes, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, the future's going to hold what it does, and we need to plan for that, but we don't need to live in that. That's where anxiety and fear and worry exist.
Right.
So stay grounded in the present. It's interesting. The research shows that the brain actually doesn't know the difference between what's real and what's imagined. So what that means is that, you know, you're asleep at night, you're having a dream, someone's chasing you, and you wake up and the covers are all a wreck and you're all sweaty.
Right.
Is it just me? Maybe it's just me.
No, it's not you. The first couple weeks of COVID, I was like, I got COVID. I got a fever. I have COVID. And it was just the heat was on because it was cold.
Your body is biochemically responding as if it's actually happening.
Yeah.
Because your brain doesn't actually know the difference between what's real and what's imagined. So when we spend a lot of time in the future imagining
what
the worst case
happen.
Scenario,
right.
catastrophizing how things could go wrong, that's what our body is going to respond to. And it's going to put our body under a lot of stress. So you plan for the future, but stay grounded in the present. We've talked about the spirit. We talked about the mind, the body part. I would say let's get real practical on everyday routines. Sleep deprivation is a form of torture, right? So one of the first things I assess with people is how are you sleeping? Because everything is going to be built off of that.
Okay, so how do you sleep? Because I struggle. I mean, honestly, the last couple of months, like they've been, because I didn't have a routine. I think I did good the first 2 weeks because it was like, this will be over. two, 3 weeks, we'll be done, be back to life, right? And then month three, I was like, Jesus. And I haven't had the best, you know, sleep pattern. So for someone who might be watching, who is struggling with insomnia, or they already had problems sleeping and now, like you said, they don't, how does routine play into that?
So routine is really important. I would do a quick search online for sleep hygiene. There are a lot of tips and tricks out there, but a lot of it is about being really intentional, very mindful, staying in a routine so that your body knows when it's time to go to sleep. For people who struggle long-term with sleep, they may need to talk to somebody, a therapist or doctor, to help with that. But that's one of those key building blocks that we have to figure out with people first, because everything else is going to kind of come toppling down if sleep isn't in the picture. So sleep, exercise is my go-to number one thing with clients. Don't worry. You don't have to run a sprint marathon.
I can just walk. Can I just walk around the block?
Yes, you can.
Okay.
Yes, you can.
Because I am not the one that's going to get up. I'll eat the kale, but I'm not about to run for forever.
All you have to do is get your heart rate up. If you get your heart rate up for 30 minutes a day, so outside walking in Atlanta, we got great hills to walk on.
Yes.
The research shows that it's equivalent to a low dose of antidepressants for most people. So it's a real practical thing that we can do that boosts our serotonin, it boosts our neurotransmitters, kind of helps to re-regulate and get everything back in line. Now, some people may still need an additional boost, and that's where we would recommend they see a psychiatrist or their doctor. Mm-hmm. But start with the exercise and see what it does to help. For a lot of people, it just gets that momentum going. And then I would say nutrition. You mentioned the kale.
Yes.
When we're out of routine, we're off track, there's a tendency to comfort eat.
Yes.
Comfort drink. And we need to be really mindful about what we're putting in our bodies. So if we can get some of those basic things in place, it helps set us up to handle stressors.
Yeah. That actually also leads me into the next question, which is just more for people who, you said it a little bit earlier, there are some people who have a bigger issue than just kind of self-care routine. They're to the point where they are at the despair, death, just having a really hard time getting out of bed in the morning, not wanting to talk to anybody, not being able to reach out. I know that I shared that my son had passed away, and I went through a lot of grief.
Yeah.
And people ask me at different times, like, oh, hey, so how come you didn't call me or just reach out? And I'm like, you don't understand. I can't, like,
was
think
at the end of
in
everything.
The morning. Right. Like, I can't call you. I'm not even thinking about you. It's enough to get out of the bed just to go get something to eat or to get out of bed to go downstairs and get a drink. You know, I don't have the capacity to be able to call somebody.
Yeah.
So what do you say to those people who need something very practical, or what would be a practical next step for them if they're in that dark, kind of heavy place?
Mm-hmm. You know, one of the things that I hope comes from this conversation and other conversations that I know are happening right now is just to be able to normalize the process of counseling. You don't have to be crazy to go to counseling, right? Like I say, the most healthy people, I think, are the ones who've reached out for help, right?
Yeah.
And so I like to think of it as a process that we would give each other in a perfect world. If we had all the things to give each other, we would show up for each other like great counselors. You know, we would be empathic, we would lean in, we'd be able to hold other people's things, we'd come in wisdom.
Yeah.
We wouldn't be clouded by our own stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't live in a perfect world. And what therapists have learned how to do is to set our things aside for the moment and to show up 100%. At least 90%.
I was going to say, because you go to school for that.
Yeah.
To be able to do it. It's not easy, like you said, to be able to, me not having the background, the knowledge, the understanding, the wisdom.
It's a practice.
Yeah.
You know? And so when we're able to show up with somebody like that, that is healing in and of itself.
Mm-hmm.
But then there are specific tools and strategies and ways that we can equip people to walk through whatever it is that they're dealing with.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think part of that is naming for them what's going on.
Mm.
I believe really strongly when we name something, we take some of the power away from it.
Mm.
So when we don't know what's going on, it feels big. It's like a monster that's looming.
Yeah.
But when we can say, hey, I understand this. It's not easy, but I understand what's going on, and I understand there's a way through this.
Mm.
And on the other side, I'm going to be better when I can move
through
it.
That,
mm-hmm.
So I think
that naming, like you said, helps to then say, oh, well, it's okay for me to seek help because it's not like, I'm not crazy. Yeah. That's the stigma that I know a lot of people, I thought, I'm not going to the therapist. I'm fine. I'm good.
I think I've seen a shift in that maybe over the last 10 years or so where people are talking more about counseling and it feels less stigmatized, but there still is that piece of it.
Yeah.
I think, especially in terms of what's modeled for us in our communities and in our families, if people aren't talking about, hey, counseling is an option and it's helpful and it's normal and we can help you find somebody, then in the middle of something hard, we're probably not going to have it in ourselves to reach out and find somebody in those moments.
Because it's like a muscle.
Yeah.
You got to work it.
Right.
Even if it's not your muscle, people around you need to be the muscle to kind of help you move that direction. I know that you work with men specifically a lot. You've kind of have a focus there. And you and I were talking a little bit earlier, and I told you that I felt, as a woman of color, it was somewhat hard for me to reach out or even think about reaching out to a mental health personnel, because that's not something talked about in my community, really. It's kind of like you should get through it. And I know that there are many factors that kind of play into that. But specifically for someone who is not familiar with mental health, with the necessity of a mental health professional in their life, or that it's okay to not be okay, what do you say to those people? Like, how do you get them to reach out? Like, what would you want to tell someone if they were watching? And I know I said men, persons of color, but all people.
Yeah. Well, I think, first of all, it's brave to reach out. And and we have to acknowledge that when we do things that require bravery, it also can be very scary at the same time, right? So I always, when I schedule an appointment with somebody for the first time, I always acknowledge this is a really brave thing for you to reach out. So I would say start by asking your friends. I suspect that more of our friends go to counseling than you imagine. Yes, it's just not something that people always talk about in conversation. But I think if you were to start floating out and say, hey, you know, I'm thinking about counseling. You know, do you know anybody? Do you know anybody that goes to counseling? I think that there's a level of vulnerability that might come pretty quickly to the surface. So that's one thing is ask for help, ask for some referrals. I do think there's some barriers around, you know, finances, finding somebody, knowing how to connect, wondering what the process would be like. And when you're in the middle of something hard, all of those things just seem harder. So I love what you said a minute ago about it being a muscle that you have to kind of flex. I think it's a great time to seek out a professional before you're in that crisis or the trauma. So when you're feeling stressed, but you still have some bandwidth, that's a great time to reach out to somebody. And maybe you don't go for a long time, but you establish a relationship and you figure out what the process is like. It's not nearly as scary as people think that it would be.
No,
it's super helpful.
Yes.
Usually at the end of the first session, people are like, why haven't I been here sooner?
I felt that way. And I went in with the mindset of, do I lay on the couch? Do I sit up? Because television,
you can do
movies.
Whatever you want.
Yeah, she said the same thing. She's like, you can do whatever you want to do. But when we finished that first session, I had gotten so much off. And she also reminded me that it wasn't just, hey, this is once and done. Like, this is a journey. It's a process. And it may have felt, I feel like our time was super short. I was there for 80 minutes. And I'm like, girl, it's only 15 minutes. We don't have any more time. I got more stuff to say. And it was much easier once we started. And now there are things that she's taught me, you know, in our time together that I'm able to use so I don't get to red as quick, as well as to encourage other people. But I never would have gone if someone else encouraged me to go. Just a few more questions. For those of us who have a friend or a family member who is in that place of like, they're either yellow or they're already all the way to red, they may not realize it, but, you know, how do we support them? Especially, I feel like it's hard to tell someone, hey, you're depressed, you need to go see somebody. And it's hard to receive that from people, if you do have the thought of, oh, this is a stigma or I'm not crazy or whatever, what are some practical ways that as a community we can lean in to help those that we love the most?
Yeah, it's a great question because I think that we spend a lot of time trying to appear okay, you know? And so when you see somebody struggling, they're probably already in orange or red.
Yeah.
Even if they're looking like they're yellow on the surface, you know? And so I would say lean in, you know, ask the question and then ask it again. You know, ask the question and then say, no, but really, how are you really doing? Yeah. Most of the time, people are relieved to have somebody really ask that question. Mm-hmm. They worry that they'll burden somebody by telling them, you know, how they're really feeling. And so they skim over the surface, right? But when you lean in, you say, yeah, no, but how are you really doing? Most of the time they're relieved to be able to talk about it.
Yeah.
And I would say, just listen, you know, a lot of times we need back to our buckets. We need somebody to hold our story. We need somebody to just listen without trying to fix the problem.
Can you please say that one more time?
Without trying to fix
I can't tell you how many people, for all the things that happened with my son, I'm actually talking to you and you don't have a solution.
Yeah.
I don't have like a physical thing that I can do. Like you said, you're not the counselor.
That's a phrase that I feel like we would be all better off if we could ban from our vocabulary. Well, you just need to.
Ma'am, please. So I think that as you're saying,
so listen openly, you know, back to what we were talking about before, maybe try to help them name some of the feelings that they're having. Because when you're in the midst of something and it, you know, you may be able to identify, you feel, you know, cloudy and just kind of
overwhelmed
and you don't know how you're feeling a lot of times. So somebody be able to say, hey, you sound really sad, or that's really hard. You sound like you're struggling.
Yeah.
Starts to kind of create some awareness so that then when you do come back and say, I don't know if this would be helpful, but I really want to tell you about my experience with counseling. Yeah. I think it could be helpful for you.
Yes.
How can I help you with that?
How can I help?
Yes. Ask the question. Yeah. How can I help?
Yeah. No, that's good. I don't know. Is there anything else that you, I don't know, that just is kind of like burning on your heart? Like, hey, I would want anyone to know wherever they are, whether they're in that yellow space, the orange, the red, or even in the green, because I know you said reaching out before you get to those places. Like, what would be your advice or something that you would want people watching right now to know when it comes to that?
You know, I would love for one of the bright spots from this season, I would love for one of the bright things to come from this is that we are all a little more vulnerable about talking about what we need, right? Like, instead of having these walls and this armor up, I'm great, I've got it all together. I think a lot of times when we're in leadership, whether it be leadership of a family or an organization, we feel like we have to project this image that we have it all together, and we don't have it all together. None of us have it all together. And at different times, we're all going to be more of a mess than other times, you know? And so whether it feels like a significant mental health issue or it feels like an area where you're just struggling, there's space to let your guard down and really become the best version of yourself that you were created to be. And I think if we could change the conversation where we were more vulnerable and we were talking about that, we would have more people who were the best versions of themselves that they were created to be.
Yeah. Thank you, Wendy, so much for being here with us today. I think everything that you said was so practical and really will give a lot of people handles to be able to make decisions, whether that's regarding, hey, do I get a counselor or do I build a new routine? Just everything you said was so helpful, and we're just so grateful to have you here with us today.
Thanks for having me.
Oh, yeah, thanks. And thank you so much for being here with us today and for journeying with us through this topic for the last couple of weeks. If at any point in time today, you felt like, hey, that's me. I need to take some steps towards healing. We would love to walk alongside you. If you go to DecaturCity.org /care, we have all kinds of resources for you, including a way to get connected with great counselors like Wendy in our area. Please reach out to us if there's anything that we can do to help. As Tinsley said, each and every one of you is such a valuable part of our community. You are not alone, and we want to be there for you if you're struggling. We hope you have a great week, and we'll see you next time at Decatur City Church Online.